93.5.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Controversial cluster bombs are being sent to Ukraine. These munitions are banned in more than 100 countries. Mary Wareham with Human Rights Watch calls the decision
disappointing to see the U.S. condemn Syria's use of cluster munitions, to condemn Russia's use of cluster munitions, but then all of a sudden turn around and say, okay, well, we're going to provide cluster munitions to Ukraine.
It is hot, like really hot. Texas is sweltering, and there are concerns that the state's power grid can't keep up. Texas Tribune energy reporter Emily Foxhall.
Experts have really credited solar and wind power for getting us through these tighter than usual times.
So just how hot has it been? Our Christopher Cruz is sweating out the numbers.
The planetary average has been hovering at around 63 degrees Fahrenheit. Some scientists and temperature monitoring groups say this week could be the warmest globally in 120,000 years.
Yeah, global warming is a real threat, and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's calling for deeper cooperation between the U.S. and China. BBC correspondent Rupert Wingfield Hayes.
China and the U.S. are the world's biggest emitters, but they are also the ones who have the technology and the financial clout to be able to do something about it.
The man responsible for a massacre in El Paso, Texas, 4 years ago, learned his fate yesterday. CBS's Daniel Backus.
A federal judge sentenced the self-proclaimed white supremacist who killed 23 people at an El Paso Walmart to 90 consecutive life terms. 24-year-old Patrick Crucius could still face the death penalty in his upcoming state trial for carrying out the racist attack in 2019 on Hispanic shoppers in the Texas border city.
Correspondent Jim Crisola has the latest on a sex abuse investigation involving a religious group.
A Pennsylvania grand jury investigating child sexual abuse among Jehovah's Witnesses has charged another five people with raping or molesting children as young as four. The indictments are the latest charges in an ongoing probe that has identified 14 suspects.
A Charles Manson follower might get out of prison soon after being locked up for more than half a century. KCAL TV's Tom Waite.
Manhattan, now 73, was convicted for participating in two of the infamous Manson family murders. Manhattan has been recommended for parole five times, but her release was ultimately blocked by former Governor Jerry Brown and current Governor Gavin Newsom.
You feeling lucky? The potential prize for the massive Powerball jackpot just made history. Someone could end up taking home $615 million in tonight's drawing. It's the 10th largest Powerball prize ever. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. There is a bill in Congress to help give rural communities a better chance at getting federal money they normally don't get because of competition from bigger cities. Mark Moran has more now on the Rebuild Rural America Act.
Senators in Washington, D.C. want to see a $50 billion infusion into America's rural areas. The legislation is written to address rural America's unique challenges and would make it easier for smaller towns and counties to access federal grant money for desperately needed projects, from upgrading roads and bridges to fixing schools and providing broadband internet. Annie Contractor with the nonprofit RuralOrganizing.org says this funding would ignite an economic comeback in parts of the country that often have a hard time competing for federal funds.
Block grant funding, which would deliver funding directly to rural communities, is really important for an equitable distribution of those tax-funded programs that are meant to help communities thrive.
RuralOrganizing.org says 8 out of 10 distressed communities are rural, and 60% of residents in those areas are people of color. Contractor says local flexibility is a crucial piece of the proposal, which would allow town and county leaders to design programs they know will help their specific communities.
Anything from child care systems or subsidization to infrastructure like water or roads. And that's really important because every rural community is different.
She adds the Rebuild Rural America measure would build on investments the Biden administration has already made in rural parts of the country with the Inflation Reduction Act. The bill hasn't yet been assigned to a committee. I'm Mark Moran.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed Group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago, and that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Listening to The Empowered Caregiver with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand. Tonight, it is just Kristen. Liza is on a well-deserved vacation, and I'm really excited for her. She's not had a full week vacation in a very long time. We have a great show planned for today. I can't wait to get started with our guests. We're going to be joined by Lynn Abati-Johnson, a business consultant and global community builder in the digital marketing space, who wrote the book Out of Love about the caregiving experience she had with her mother and her amazing journey of working while being a caregiver. Then we'll be speaking with Angela Howard, the founder and CEO of Call for Culture, an organization that is hacking the intersection of business impact and employee interest to sustainably transform workplace cultures. These two leaders have some interesting perspectives to share to get us all thinking outside of the box, especially in terms of what work is, how to be employed as a family caregiver, and how to get a better sense of what we need as caregivers and individuals. So let's get started. Welcome, Lynn. You have recently published Out of Love, A Daughter's Journey with Her Mom to the End. Can you tell us what inspired you to write this book and what you hope readers take away from it?
For having me, I really appreciate being here with you. I wrote the book because it had to be written. It had to be shared. I realized through my transformational journey through caregiving for my mom and the grief process that not many conversations have been happening around things that are uncomfortable, maybe stigmatized. And when my mom was first diagnosed in 2011, I thought it was a death sentence for me as well. And I just couldn't imagine being on the planet without my mom. And what I learned, fortunately, we had about 6 years, a little over 6 years with her on that, what I call the cancer roller coaster. And so I really gained some tools over those years to not only sustain myself in my own leadership journey emotionally and spiritually and at a soul level, but also practical tools and logistics that I now offer to other family caregivers to help through their journeys of the everyday, in and out, always different scenarios that happen when someone, a loved one especially, is going through some kind of a health journey. It could be anything.
Sure. And isn't that true, that it is just a whole roller coaster of different experiences and different feelings? And so what do you hope readers take away from reading that, though?
That everything's going to be okay. My main message for other family caregivers is that you're going to be okay. You're not alone. And that these days, unlike the years that I was going through it, there is so much more support. There are so many more resources. And I know for sure that you're going to be okay, dear fellow caregivers. So,
well, thank you. As a family caregiver, I love hearing that because both Lynn and Angela have had an inside picture to the frazzled life of Kristen, the working empowered caregiver. As I'm trying to sit down in front of our radio show tonight and managing a lot of different fire. So I think that's great. I'm going to lean into that tonight, that I am going to be okay, because you two have already been incredibly gracious as guests, knowing that I'm coming here at the last second. And so it's just, it's a great community and a great message. Well, it's a great message to give a great community, right? To help us feel like we aren't alone and that we can do this.
Yes. And I'm here because I'm with you. And that's what I always say. I'm with you. And even though our circumstances are completely unique, we still have a common thread that weaves together that tapestry that we all live in our daily lives. And what you're doing with the Empowered Caregiver Network at the community is really phenomenal. So I want to be part of more of these kinds of conversations in everyday life. I want it to be mainstream.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you, Lynn. I'm curious, at what time in your journey did you identify as the family caregiver? And at that time of being a caregiver, did you do any research on what that meant for you? Because it sounds like you said there's so many more. How long ago was it when mom passed? You had mom with a cancer diagnosis for 6 years. What year did she pass?
2017. In fact, it was May 1st, 2017.
Oh, and it's coming up.
Diagnosed in early 2011, and I had no idea, Kristen, what a caregiver even was. I didn't even know that was a term,
right?
First of all, and no one in our family had ever had any kind of serious diagnosis, even though my mom did. My mom carried the BRCA2 gene. So interestingly, and if you've ever looked at epigenetics, this is a whole interesting science there. But neither one of my grandparents ever manifested what the gene that they were carrying. One of them was carrying it, and neither one of them ever had cancer. And so my mom was the first that I knew about that was a close relative. And so I did not understand the meaning of the term caregiver. I didn't know there was such a thing as family caregiver. In fact, I just recently learned about respite caregiving. Like, I didn't know, I felt like we were completely on our own, deer in the headlights, hanging by a thread at every moment, and trying to figure it all out and sort through this maze of information all at once. So all of a sudden we had to learn about what cancer even is. Sure. And then we had to learn about what cancer likes and what it doesn't like, and what to eat, what to drink, you know, all this, like supplements, and how the East and Western health approaches complement each other or are contraindicated. I never knew the meaning of the word contraindicated in terms of medications and supplements. And so what ended up happening was that we created systems and structures around my mom's care. And it was really interesting because I always say we almost turned my mom's diagnosis into a business, because we were all entrepreneurs. And so
as professionals, you were all entrepreneurs.
Yes. Got it. My mom was like the original marketer in our family, that before that was even a term. And she was an entrepreneur. And I was raised in a family business, working from the age of 9, facing customers. And so all we knew to do was to build some structure and some systems around her diagnosis. And so that's why in the book and on my website, I provide free PDFs of, you know, checklists and tracking charts and all of those practical logistical things that I knew we would either forget about or we wouldn't even know about in our journey of care for her.
And I wish I had found you a lot sooner too, right? And all the resources, because I know that many of our listeners, but I might not have shared with both of our guests here what our story is. Liza and I are both parents of young adult children with autism, and then an intellectual disability going compounding with that. And then my daughter has epilepsy. So similar to you, nobody in our family had had epilepsy. So all of a sudden I was a teacher, not just a teacher, but a teacher, right? And I was proud of that. But I became, like you said, a business executive that had to manage all these different systems, a nurse, a doctor, a researcher. And it just, it can be overwhelming. And having those tools, I mean, that's wonderful. So let's give a quick shout out to your website as so that people can get to those specific things.
I'll let you do it. It's LynnAbatejohnsonBook.com.
Let's spell that name out.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and spell it.
LYNN, A, B as in boy, A-T-E, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, B-O-O-K.com. Okay. And then you'll see at the top, there's a tab for resources, and then you can just go in and get the, you know, you just put in your email address and.
Right. Exactly. It's perfect. Right. And besides writing that book, you are a business consultant and a global community builder. Can you tell me a little bit about how that has intersected in the world of caregiving?
Yes, it's a really good question, because what I do for a living and to generate income is very, very integrated with the story that I tell about personal transformation and my leadership journey. As a firstborn of five children, I was always a natural leader anyway. I was always given almost extra responsibility. And I was that person for my mom. I was that child of hers that was her admin person, her go-to person for everything systematic, right? Sure. And so it was a very natural thing for me to put into practice what I've learned about running businesses, growing businesses, gathering community around businesses over all of the years, and then gathering community around my mom and her cancer diagnosis. So all of those skills that I've learned from a very young age have also informed who I am as a daughter and as a business person. And it's not that far of a stretch, you know, it is all really connected.
Sure. And are you seeing that thread continue to travel as you've no longer been the caregiver for your mom? Are you seeing that thread of those consultant skills and global community builder skills into work you're doing today?
Yes, I definitely am. Now I have a better sensibility of who people really are their whole selves, and not just who they show up at work as. Right. So when my mom was first diagnosed, I was in Silicon Valley working for a global internet startup, and I didn't let anybody know what I was dealing with at home. And now I have that sensibility. Even you'll see me on LinkedIn talking about, you know, how are you really? What's going on with you, not only on your profile, on your socials, on your LinkedIn, what's going on for you at home? So it's made me a lot more curious.
Oh, that's excellent. It's made you more curious. And then are you helping people understand how to bring that in as either an employer or an employee?
I like to think so. I think the more conversations we have about this, and the more, again, I'll use the word mainstream, we make these everyday conversations, the more important it is for our communities and our world as a whole.
Excellent point. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking more with Lynn about why she believes that work-life balance is a myth.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The most elitist scorn towards average people exists within sort of that conservative far right ecosystem.
We're a couple of dudes who used to be Republicans. We were Dwight Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan, Tommy Thompson, Scott Klug Republicans. This Republican Party you got now with Robin Voss and Devin Lemieux, the Republican Party at the top, want to start banning books, for God's sake.
Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
When you take the iconic Wienermobile and you call it the Frankmobile, come on, that is terrible.
The Kraft Heinz Company announced the name change to celebrate the brand's 100% beef franks as the company debuts a new recipe. Well, no more lips and other things,
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Devil's Advocates Radio.
The entire light beer industry is under attack from the right at this time. Apparently, that they no longer have women in bikinis selling the beer.
I would suggest, and this is on the Fox Entertainment Network.
I believe it's the Fox News. Well,
well, I just hope they don't get to the Captain Morgan and Diet Cokes, man. That'd be a sad day.
The Devil's Advocates Radio with Dom and Crute. Weekdays 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
A guy named Bill out in Econowoc. Bill's got some thoughts on that.
Thanks for talking about what you're talking about right now. Your station, you raise the bar high for integrity. You are a community radio station, which means you look out for all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin.
Daily conversations about Wisconsin's latest headlines and stories. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Empowered Caregiver Show, and I'm Kristen Voss, and I'm here in studio with my co-host Liza Hellenbrand, and we're speaking with our guest Ellen Merker from Heart Consulting. I'm having a hard time putting Ellen Merker and Heart Consulting together. We've been talking.
You leave that those to me.
I know. Yeah, exactly. This time I've caught Liza's. We've been talking about the need for better understanding how to support people with disabilities and having healthy relationships. And as I've mentioned a couple times, I'm a mother of a 21-year-old young woman with autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. So this topic hit a nerve with me. I know that my daughter, Nicole, is yearning for a full life with different types of relationships, including a romantic one. And so I also know that she's incredibly vulnerable, though, and has experienced some trauma. So I wanted to learn more about how all of these issues are interconnected. And when I saw your group being advertised, I was like, sign me up. I've got to be part of it. Can you remind me what the name? I thought it was interesting what you chose to name the group.
Yeah, it's now I have to remember what order the words go in, but it's brains, trauma, and big emotions.
There we go. And it's okay. There isn't a quiz at the end of the show. So
okay.
Even if
you
got
trauma, brains, and big emotions. Yes. I think I messed up that order.
That's okay. But we got the idea that there's trauma, big emotions, and brain being discussed. What sparked your interest in developing this group for caregivers?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of times I'll see clients coming to me for therapy, and the expectation from caregivers, parents, professionals that, okay, we've done our part, right? They just have to go to therapy once a week and then we're good. When in fact, if you know, I could do a fantastic job in therapy and do everything right, and yet if they're going home to somewhere that is very triggering for them, or is, you know, not supportive in some way of their neurodivergence or not trauma informed, they're going to continue to have triggers and it's going to be harder and harder to heal. And so we really need both paid and unpaid caregivers to understand how trauma really is impacting people's nervous system. There's a lot of neuroscience behind this that it's really important to understand, because when we have a better understanding, we can approach it with more empathy, rather than saying, well, they're just being difficult, you know, with these challenging behaviors, quote unquote. But if we approach it from that humanistic understanding of curiosity and just kind of wanting to support, then we see major changes in somebody's healing.
Okay. I think I'm still struggling with why is somebody whose mission is to help neurodivergent people have these rich lives and sexual experiences and relationships, why are you also bringing in trauma?
Unfortunately, so sex and trauma should not go together, right? Anytime there is, I've never understood the word non-consensual sex, because that is sexual assault, and let's call it what it is. Unfortunately, we see this happening a lot. And so I want to kind of address this from two different perspectives, the proactive part of that education and trying to prevent it. But we also really need more resources that when somebody has experienced trauma, that them and their caregivers, their supports are able to manage that, that people know how to report it, that people know how to, you know, work with somebody who is experiencing these really tough emotions after a trauma so that they're not getting re-traumatized.
Okay, that makes more sense to me. I appreciate that. And are we talking about trauma just from a sexual assault angle, or are we talking about it in the whole big picture? And is that why you're referencing?
No, big picture. I mean, this group is for, you know, caregivers whose, you know, son or daughter or whoever they are caring for has experienced any type of trauma.
Okay.
So whether that be sexual abuse or assault, you know, trauma can be from just being autistic or being neurodivergent and being bullied, like all through your childhood, being excluded all through your childhood. That's traumatic. That impacts the way that we're connecting with other people. So there's a lot of different ways that somebody can experience trauma, and it's important. You know, there's no hierarchy here. Trauma is trauma, and we need to be supporting somebody no matter what that traumatic experience is.
Well, I like that you say that. And we did some a show a while back on trauma and some of the work of, now I cannot think of his name, Gabor Maté. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. And he kind of went into big T and little T as far as trauma goes, because sometimes when you think of trauma, your brain goes to the most traumatic example that it can think of, and really it doesn't have to be that. There are a lot of things that are out there that can be traumatizing to you and stick with you.
Right. I think I've already been educated on the fact that I was thinking, well, is this the right group for me? Because Nicole hasn't experienced sexual trauma to my knowledge, but you know, I know she's at risk for that. But now understanding that, no, just Nicole's existence, having to navigate the world, has caused her to experience trauma because of her disabilities and the lack of acceptance, not just from the outer society, but also from her own family. Like in our own household, we've made all kinds of mistakes, and we've also done a lot of fighting about her and with one another in front of her about her in a way that was really disrespectful, but I wasn't understanding that in the moment. And so that right there is trauma, whether it's a big T, little T, or middle T. And so I really appreciate both of you helping me understand that trauma doesn't have to mean being raped or sexually assaulted, that it can be some of these.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be one singular event. It can be, you know, chronic stress, chronic, you know, poverty, you know, experiencing racism and discrimination. Those are all traumatic events, even if it's not one specific time.
Definitely makes sense.
Yeah. And what are some of the topics that you will be addressing in your course for caregivers?
Yeah, so we're going to be going over sort of self-compassion for caregivers. Caregivers don't get a lot of time to do this, but it's really, really important to take care of yourself as a caregiver. And we're going to talk about why that's so important. We're going to talk about understanding neurodivergence and how, you know, executive functioning skills may impact somebody's emotions. We're going to talk about understanding the neuroscience behind trauma. We're going to talk about connection and healing and what supports can do to really promote that healing. And we're going to talk about how to work with your therapist or the child's therapist, as well as their school, in being more trauma informed.
You're listening to Ellen Merker from Heart Consulting. We'll be back after this short break.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. President Biden says the Ukrainians are running out of ammunition. That's why he made the decision to send over controversial cluster bombs. CBS military consultant Jeff McCausland.
Estimates at one time were a dead rate of up to 20%. Pentagon has said this dead rate has been reduced to about 2%, but it's really an open question since the dead rate is largely a function of the terrain.
Excessive heat still blanketing parts of the country. In Tucson, triple-digit temps. This man is a landscaper.
You try to get out early, stay hydrated, take your breaks as you need them.
The 24-year-old gunman who carried out a deadly attack at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, will spend the rest of his life behind bars. Correspondent Daniel Backus.
Crucius pleaded guilty to federal hate crime charges in February after prosecutors took the death penalty off the table. The judge recommended he serve the sentence at a maximum security prison in Colorado.
The shooter was a self-proclaimed white supremacist. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
This is an urgent announcement for anyone that's $10,000 or more in debt. Total Financial Freedom can help you become debt-free in months instead of years. Resolve your credit card debt, signature loans, department store cards, internet loans, and timeshares. Call Total Financial Freedom now at 800-208-1312 for a free consultation. You have the right to get your debt resolved and substantially reduce your monthly payments. Call Total Financial Freedom now, 800-208-1312. Call now.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
Yeah, I wanna go outside, I wanna be.
We're here!
Whoa, that was fast!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. That cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Kristen and Liza with the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Ellen about the services that Heart Consulting provides for people with disabilities and their family caregivers around both healthy relationships and protection from sexual harassment and violence. So it's been really interesting to listen to how Ellen has helped us see that we need to do this from both angles, right? When we're talking about a neurodivergent population, we need to be looking at the fact that this group has experienced trauma and can be more at risk for sexual assault or misunderstanding. And then also, this group hasn't had a lot of education, nor have their family caregivers, around why it's important for them to be able to have healthy sexual relationships and how to support that. So I've really enjoyed the show so far. And I want you to know, Ellen, that every show we like to ask some powerful questions, which are those that push you to go inward and reflect a little bit on your own personal experiences and thoughts. So my question for you first off is, since you do provide consultation work for teams, families, and or caregivers, what's one of your favorite stories about a caregiver you have met in your work?
So I do some work with a managed care organization where specifically my referrals are for people who have really significant trauma. They are living in situations where there's high, like, restrictive measures, insane, like, behavioral support plans, really, really, like, strict sort of situations. Sure. And I get called in when, you know, it's a lot of sexualized behaviors and that kind of thing. And a lot of these times it's in very rural areas where the staff, the caregivers have zero experience talking about sexuality, and seeing them sort of open up, being more open-minded to a different way of doing things. You know, sometimes I see them be real stubborn and dig their heels in, but I can think of one particular client where the team has really taken what I've said, done my trainings, and become more open-minded in how they can approach the behavioral concerns in a more trauma-informed way.
That's awesome. Good for you.
And my question for you, Ellen, is what continues to be the greatest challenge, and how do you navigate that?
Funding is always a little tricky, sure. Which I'm sure pretty much anybody running any kind of a social service agency will agree with. So I've had to get a little creative lately and reach out to some new sort of organizations like Community Outreach Wisconsin and finding some new ways, because groups in particular are a little bit harder to fund, and I'm not a nonprofit, so it's hard to find grant funding. So I think the way I've been navigating that is to just kind of really collaborate with other organizations and connect with other organizations, because there's a lot of power in that.
Yes, and I think you've done some good work with that, because your name keeps coming up across my screen, literally and figuratively, for different things either related to the Empowered Caregiver or to Nicole, because some of the organizations that you're collaborating with are promoting you. And then as I was at a meeting with some of the Team Nicole providers, they said, oh yeah, Heart Consulting, you want to talk with them, definitely, because Nicole is potentially developing a boyfriend. I got a text from one of her service providers that it has been confirmed that Nicole has a crush on Ian and Ian has a crush on Nicole. I was like, okay, not quite sure. Yes, it is great, but I'm not quite sure what we do with that. And so they said, this is why you're talking to Ellen, both on the show and off the show. And this is why I'm taking your group next month. So I think your collaboration is proving to be very successful. So again, I kind of want to push you into thinking about some of this from a personal standpoint. How has all of this work and this experience impacted your own journey in life? How are you being affected by all this?
Yeah. So, you know, I get asked a lot, what motivated you to start your agency? And I feel like people always are looking for something really inspirational, but the real answer is anger. I get really angry when I see something that I believe is unfair. And I could either, you know, take that anger and sit with it. But instead I try to look for, okay, so where is my power and where is my control here? Certainly there are some things I can't control. But this was one thing that I could do something about. I had experience in the area. And so doing something is what has really helped with some of that anger. Sure. But it's also led me down a path of becoming a stronger advocate. You know, I've always been an advocate on the individual level, but this work has really led me to doing more advocacy on a larger level, like with the state and governments and funding. And I did the Wisconsin Women's Network Policy Training Institute a few years ago, shortly after starting my business. And that just gave me so much confidence in my ability to really advocate on a bigger scale.
And what are three things that you would like to say to all caregivers?
So first, take care of yourself. If you are just like drained and exhausted and stressed, it's really hard to take care of others. And this is a huge part of, you know, being regulated is going to help so much with taking care of others. Two, connect, right? There is a lot of power in connecting with people who are going through something similar with you. That's why we have support groups. And there's a lot of healing and strength in that. And finally, just remembering that, you know, we are all human. We are all flawed, but you are doing a fantastic job.
I like that. That's a nice message at the end. And in terms of community outreach, because I know that's one of the other angles, and you've mentioned it briefly in terms of what was the group that you're connected with and you're going to be doing some work with in August?
Gigi's Playhouse.
Right. Okay. And we've had them on. They're they're awesome. But what was the community outreach piece? Because that's a group you're doing for self-advocates, right?
Yes.
At Gigi's.
So actually that's for caregivers. So Community Outreach Wisconsin is kind of like a branch of the Wiseman Center outreach program. Mm-hmm. And they offer various trainings, mostly for caregivers right now, but we may be looking into doing some for self-advocates with disabilities down the road too.
Okay. So let me clarify though. So the one at Gigi's Playhouse is for caregivers or for self-advocates?
For both. So it's going to be kind of a joint. It's for kids ages 5 through 10, and their caregivers are going to be there with them.
Excellent. And then through the Wiseman Center, they've got this organization, Community Outreach Network?
Wisconsin.
And there you're going to be doing what exactly?
So those are going to be multiple trainings. It's not all set up yet, but it's going to be for caregivers to learn about having conversations about healthy sexuality, relationships, online safety, how to talk to kids, teens, and adults about these topics.
Well, and that was my next question for you. When you said 5 to 6, I kind of jaw dropped a little bit because I was thinking, oh, yeah, kids.
Right.
Why not start at kid age? You know, I'm thinking sex, teenagers, puberty, so on and so forth. And 5 to 10. Wait, what? On that note, though, when would you recommend having these conversations with your kids or getting the information as a parent so you can have these conversations with your kids?
Yeah. So kids learn about relationships first at home, right? Like they see the relationships between adults in their homes. So anytime really is a good, I have a 2-year-old, and while I don't directly talk about consent, I ask, are you ready to get your diaper changed? He says no. He says no all the time. And obviously he needs to have his diaper changed, and you can't really reason with a 2-year-old. But I respect that. And I say, okay, how about we listen to one song or we read one book and then we go and change your diaper. Right. So I'm like modeling this from a very young age that you can say no, that, you know, I will listen to and respect that. Again, you got to have your diaper changed. Nothing we can do about that, but, modeling that kind of, that consent and that I asked as well.
I like that about the whole idea of asking and just the idea that it is his body. Right. And so because you're going into his personal space that you are recognizing and modeling this idea that it isn't my job to just come in, swoop in and do it. It's really more respectful.
Well, and he would have an absolute fit, a temper tantrum, if I just forced him to change from one activity to another so quickly. Transitions are really hard.
I'm just thinking I got to pat myself on the back because there's been times where I've helped people with disabilities, like put on a seatbelt or whatnot. And I just naturally always ask.
I've seen you do that with
Nicole. Is it okay if I
reach
across your lap? Is it okay if I fasten this for you?
Right.
Yes. Exactly. That's great.
It is great.
And especially if you're doing personal cares for somebody with a disability, that is so important. Even if they're nonverbal, you know, putting your hands up, yes or no. And having them point to one of your hands to indicate yes or no, I'm ready or I'm not ready.
That's great. Yeah. Again, I don't think that I've been doing a very good job of that. So you guys have both schooled me. So thank you.
Well, you don't know, and you don't know what you don't know, right?
I mean, right, exactly. I mean, I'm not going to lose sleep over this, but I appreciate just being. I mean, I think in ways I've been respectful with Nicole, but not in such direct, outright modeling of every time that she has the option to say no for a moment or that I will ask. I mean, I think it's just sort of assumed at this point, but no, I think it's a really, really important point.
And that can come up too with, you know, hugs and kisses and tickles, every kind of touch. If we just start modeling that from a young age, and there's also a lot of books out that, like kids' books out there these days about consent that can help parents start to teach kids about their bodies and that you have the right to say no to touch.
Well, and it's so interesting that that's where you started, right? I think what Liza meant when, oh, I mean, I guess I shouldn't assume what you mean, Liza, though we've gotten pretty close to reading each other's minds, but this idea of talking with kids that are 5 and 6 years old about sex, I wasn't even thinking about it from the standpoint of, oh, we're actually talking about consent, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's more age appropriate when you're at a younger age.
Sure.
It's like, we're not going to start describing to you the actual sexual actions or how to get sexual pleasure, but more that this is your body and you have a right to say yes or no if somebody's coming into your bubble space and or mm-hmm. touching it.
Right.
Yeah. Even if it's a necessary touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting. With this community outreach, what do you wish that more, that the government and employers, society at large, all of them, what do you wish the community would do more of or understand better to support your clients and their family caregivers?
Yeah, I really wish that the sort of measurement for quality of life was not so focused on, are they physically healthy and safe and are they employed? Right? Because like that, I used to do transition coordination, very important things, obviously. But I used to do like transition coordination and case management. And I've had experience, you know, with people getting denied services. When I try to help clients find good, safe ways to meet other people and decrease that loneliness, we always run into transportation issues. Nobody will cover transportation if it's to a social gathering, right? It's only for medical appointments and work. And so I really wish that we could take this focus again off of pathologizing everything and focusing on, you know, are they working at least 2 hours a week? Great, we're good. We've done our jobs. And really realizing that a quality of life is about more than work and being physically healthy. We need relationships. We need to decrease isolation. We need, you know, some people need to have sex. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to help them find opportunities to connect with others.
And, you know,
and that does increase safety too.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that just had me thinking, you know, that goes across the board. I mean, you can take out the neurodivergent part. There's been so many times where I'm thinking, looking at my younger 16-year-old son, like thinking, why aren't they teaching about relationships in school and how to have relationships and navigate really? You know, if the kids are just stuck on their cell phone, they don't even know what to do when a human person comes in front of them anymore.
Right, exactly. No, I think it's an excellent point. And I also love that as you were talking, Ellen, I was realizing, yeah, all that I've been asked in the last 5 years about Nicole is about vocation. Nobody's been mm-hmm. asking me or directing me or supporting me until recently, because your influence, about what do you want her to get married? Do you think she should mm-hmm. be able to have a romantic relationship? And one of the things that has been a real concern of all of ours is that she is quote unquote boy crazy, and everybody knows it, everybody sees it, but nobody's really been helping me until recently recognize that we don't need to live in this perspective of fear, right? So scared that mm-hmm. because she's boy crazy, she's now going to be, you know, so susceptible. And we talk about how she's, you know, definitely going to get into a car with anybody who might say the right or wrong thing to her. Why aren't we instead taking this as a positive thing and saying, okay, mm-hmm. Nicole's yearning for that. She's looking for that. And so how do we do something to support it happening in a positive way? What a great conversation this has been tonight with you, Ellen. You have taught me so much.
Yes. Good. Thank you so much for the great work that you do. It is so needed, and we are so glad and appreciative that you're out there doing the hard work.
Look forward to having
Thanks for helping me get the word out.
Yes. And we look forward to being at your group next month.
All right.
Have a good night.
You too.
This is the Empowered Caregiver Show with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand. And in this last segment, we want to talk about some of the current events that have been happening in the news that are related to family caregivers and the people that they take care of. This morning, I got some news about the Joint Finance Committee, and we've been talking a lot in our show about what the Joint Finance Committee has been doing with the budget and the budget proposals, and I was pretty disappointed with this one. They're still making decisions about issues that affect caregivers and their families, but the latest recap around school funding is bad news. The legislature, in my opinion, the legislature passed and the governor signed into law, even though I asked him not to yesterday.
I know, I wrote him too.
I know. He signed into law SB 330, which increases the amount of public dollars that private schools get for each student. That may not sound like a big deal because it's still money going to schools, but the problem is that private schools can refuse to admit students with disabilities, or they can admit them, but then there's no accountability for any outcomes in providing services for them or trying to meet goals for them. And worst of all, what I've heard and seen in the school district I've worked with is private schools can admit students that have IEPs or that have, it's not because they have IEPs. They admit them even though they have disabilities. And then they say, oh, we can't serve them. We can't meet their needs. And they send them back to their neighborhood public school, but they keep the funding that comes with that kid into the private school. Beth Swedeen was a guest on our show a few months back, and she said today, as the Survival Coalition co-chair, continuing to expand private schools that are allowed to selectively admit students and are not accountable for outcomes while failing to adequately cover the costs of public schools, which are required to educate all students, is not the right direction for Wisconsin. And part of why I think it's important to point this out, too, is there's a whole other secondary level to it. As she says, this because the legislature's current proposed state budget proposal only increases the state's share of special education funding from a current
31.5%.
Okay, so let's do this again. This is why it's so complicated, and this is where I get frustrated, because sometimes things become so complicated, and I feel like it's almost deliberately to alienate the population, right? So what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Liza, is that the state gets federal funding when a student has an IEP, and then they give a portion of that to the school district as the school district hires speech therapists or special education assistants. But when the state is giving the public school that reimbursement, they aren't giving the full cost. And currently, they've only been giving 31.5% of that cost, which means that the school district is having to pick up the rest, which doesn't make any sense to me. And now the problem, from what I understand, is that we're only going to get an increase of the matching funds or the covering of the special education costs at a 33.3%. And the Survival Coalition was asking for 60%. I don't understand why we can't ask for 100%, you know? And it just seems to me like this is kind of crazy, because now, as another person on the Survival Coalition said, Kit Kirchensteiner, Wisconsin is now funding two separate and unequal education systems. Wisconsin is choosing to increase funding for private schools that do not have to educate students with disabilities and where families have no recourse if their student is not receiving the specialized support they need. So I'm scared. I think this is going to be something that's going to perpetuate more income inequality. We're going to continue to have public schools being taxed with more demands and less funds, and we're going to have private schools that people can afford to pay out of pocket themselves, or they're now going to be taking very needed public dollars and moving to a private school.
It is infuriating, so much so I almost just have to be done with it, because I can go on forever about how this really harms students with disabilities.
Yeah, because it's putting a stigma on them. It's putting them in poor funded schools. And then we're just going to continue to see a perpetuation of poor performance.
Right. Well, on a positive note,
okay.
On June 9th, President Biden announced a comprehensive set of executive actions to increase the economic security of military and veteran spouses, caregivers, and survivors. This includes items such as expansion of child care, steps to improve employment outcomes for spouses and caregivers, improving support for military spouses during times of transition, and developing resources to support veteran spouse entrepreneurs, which I think is totally awesome.
Yeah.
You can learn more about it at whitehouse.gov. And it was really a bill to help military families, but I love in every sentence, they didn't just say military families, and they said military and veteran spouses, caregivers, and survivors. So it has caregivers splattered all over it. So I love that they acknowledge them as part of the military family and the military experience, and that they need their own set of support.
Right. And that they even need that own separate identification. Right. I know I've been trying to educate people. I was out in vacation this last week. And so I was meeting new people and they were asking, oh, what type of work are you doing? And I was trying to explain what we're doing here at the Empowered Caregiver Community and the Empowered Caregiver Show. And I was explaining that family caregivers are not family members alone or parents alone, right? Or sons and daughters alone. That it's when you're taking on the responsibility of providing support that people can't do, supporting things that people can't do for themselves. It's what puts you into this caregiver role. Mm-hmm. And that, yes, it's a very fulfilling role, but it's one that comes with a lot more expectations and less training as people are getting into this role for longer. And so it was really interesting to me that I had to do a lot of education still around what this role is and what it means.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I am thrilled to see some of the traction picking up. I feel like I want to give myself credit for it.
I think you should.
Joe Biden's been listening to us, exactly. Clearly. but it is because it's a national crisis and it impacts so many people, and it's something that we need to address because all research and studies and reports indicate it's not sustainable.
Nope. And it's not going to go away. No. I remember when Governor Evers, even though we're a little angry at him tonight because he signed that bill, when he was on the show, he was really, I think, stressing the point that this is a big issue in Wisconsin. It's not going away.
Right.
And that we have to start talking about it. So,
and I look forward to some of those conversations that we are going to have, especially around being a caregiver and employed.
Yeah,
is a big one. But right now, my focus, to be honest, is the fact that you and I are going to go up to Lake Cabin after this show for
A working vacation,
for
quote unquote.
A working vacation.
Exactly.
No, yes.
It's going to be nice. I can't wait to be out in nature and be able to kind of reflect on some of the stuff that we've been doing and what we are going to do. I think this conversation with Ellen was really interesting.
It was. And I can't wait to talk with her more about my son, who has a girlfriend that's going to be attending college with him. So they're going to be alone.
I was wondering if that was going to come up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting, so that's why we want to end each show with a positive note.
You got this.
And together we are stronger, so stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver Community. Good night.
Civic Media isn't just another broadcast company.
We're your neighbors. We bleed green and gold.
And we love nothing more than to help fellow Wisconsinites succeed.
Whether your business wants to advertise to your local community or the entire state, Civic Media can help. Find out more at civicmedia.us.